We're holding on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, about 12 lines from the top, line begins Tanur Rabbanan. So we were discussing yesterday the whole issue of if somebody comes into, for example, a carpenter, or a blacksmith, or whatever shop, with or without permission, what are the various dinim about if he gets injured or killed, what is the carpenter or blacksmith responsible, in what case is he responsible, what is he responsible for, and in what case is not. So now a related case. Tanur Rabbanan, Poelim Shebolus Bayas Tzoron Rebala Bayis, if workers come to demand their wages from a householder, from a Rebala Bas, the Nagchan Sheresh Rebala Bayis, and while they came to the house, while they were in the chaser, his ox gored them, or the Nashchan Kalva Shebala Bayis, or his dog bit them, Umes, and the person died, Potter, then the Rebala Bas is Potter from, the Rebala Bas is Potter from Golos. Actually, Hagoyis Habach. Well, we're going to get to that in a second. Hagoyis Habach points out that actually what's going to happen, the ox is going to be chay, the ox or the dog is going to be chay skila, since it killed the person. Regardless, that has nothing to do with the culpability of the owner. The owner, though, is going to be potter from kosher, even if the animal was a mu'ad. And the pastor is also from galus.
Okay.
So, wait, acherim ayrim. Acherim say, and usually Acherim usually is your mayor, and Rashayim Poelim, Baruch Tzoron Balabais. The workers are entitled to go and demand their wages from the Balabas. So we have to figure out,
meaning
he should be chayv on the face of it. So Hechidomi, what is the circumstances over here? Idishriach b'masa, are we talking about a person who usually you would find him around in the city? My time at Acherim. And why are the Acherim saying that they had Rishus to come in on the face of it? Why are they bothering to come to his house? Let them come and meet him in the streets, which is where they'll be likely to find him anyway, and demand their wages from him over there.
Maybe they didn't know it was a cow.
No, but that's neither here nor there. The point is, if they know that they can find him in the street, usually that would be, wait, we'll talk about, let's go through the Gemara, and then we'll talk about how it applies in later times. The Rif, for example, doesn't bring this whole discussion for reasons that we'll talk about in a minute. Thanks. Okay, the Eid is Shriach Babayis, and if this person is more commonly found in his house and not in the street, my time at the Tanakhama, then why would the Tanakhama stay? How else are they supposed to get their wages if he's at home? Tosfos, by the way, has a different girsa as far as the first part, Eid is Shriach B'mosa. Tosfos brings a couple of other, brings a different girsa, Eid is Shriach B'shuka. A similar idea. It means that they might find him not so much in the house, they might find him in the street. And also, Masa means the city. Shuka means the marketplace. As opposed to if they regularly find him at home. And Tosfos points out that actually what it is the Shriach B'Masa or the Shuka doesn't necessarily, when you say over there that he's not Shriach in his house, doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, we're not necessarily talking about whether, I mean, you're on the face of it, a person lives at home. So either you find him at home or you find him, where would there be a case where you wouldn't regularly find him at home. Tosfos says, let's say, for example, he's a peddler. He's regularly on the road. So then it's not acceptable that you would find him at home. Why are the Acherim saying what Tosfos says actually is if, for example, he's a peddler, on the contrary, they do have permission to come to his house because that's the only place they can necessarily be expected to find him. Otherwise, he may not be anywhere in the city. He may be outside the city. But when he comes home, he'll be in his house. So, yeah.
The point is we're trying to figure out
what are the circumstances where the Chachamim would say that these workers did not have specific right to come there, and therefore whatever happens to them, tough luck, and therefore the owner is potter, whereas Acherim, the mayor, are saying that they should be allowed to come in, and therefore he should be chayav. What are the circumstances?
Depending on the circumstances.
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. Yeah. The answer is loy tzricha begavra the shchiach loy shchiach. Fine, but you can have a case of somebody who is sometimes found, but sometimes not. Sometimes you can regularly find him at home, sometimes not. So you're not sure whether you can find him in the street or not. You do go to his house. However, a kori abava. However, the person, the worker, comes and calls at the door, knocks at the door. Of amalhu ein, and the balabas says yes.
Meaning
he's there. But wait, what does ain mean? Marsava ain ul ta mashma. The acherim hold that ain amounts to saying yes, come on in. Therefore, you have rishus to come in. Therefore, it means I'm accepting responsibility that my shor won't gooey with that. Whereas the Tanakhama would hold that ain implies, yes, I'm here, you wait there, I'll bring your wages out. So that's the two different ways of looking at it. Now Tosfos makes the point, therefore, that if he was usually at home.
So who's negligent? So
that's the thing. According to the Tanakhama, the worker is negligent because when he heard the word ain, yes, he didn't have to come in. He should have stayed where he was and waited for the guy to come after him. Whereas according to the Achirim, the Balabas.
Yeah. He didn't say wait outside.
Right. Because he didn't clearly say wait outside, right. And that's the point. Tosfos says that we have to...
Since the Balabas is home, he doesn't have to stay wait outside. They should ask permission.
No, but if he said ain, maybe that implies, yes, come on in. That's the question, basically. Now, Tosfos points out that actually it would have, Tosfos points out that it still requires us to say that both circumstances. Remember, we started by discussing is the guy usually at home or not, and then we moved to discussing whether when he says ain, Tosfos points out you need both of them. If he's usually found at home, then obviously when he says ain means wait where you are. Then there's no reason for them to think that ain might mean come on in. Because if he is always at home, then ain would mean I'm home, I have money over here, so wait and I'll come out to you.
So therefore
you need both. You need that he's shliach for shliach and that he said ain, and that's where you have a machlokes. There are other rishonim who learn differently. There are other rishonim. In fact, we have a girsa in the Gemara here that the Gemara is giving two different answers. That one is it may depend whether shliach or shliach, whether he's usually at home or not. Or even if he's commonly at home, whether he said ain. That's a different way of looking at it. And in fact, there's a whole discussion about how the Rambam holds that. The Rish B'chlal doesn't bring this whole discussion at all. And the Farshim said,
the meaning of ain, basically.
Sort of. Well, according to Tosfos, that's what it does. Yeah, according to the other way of looking at it, these are two independent variables. The Rish, interestingly, does not bring this whole discussion at all. And the Farshim on the Rif say the reason is evidently because the Rif held this is a situational thing. It really depends how people normally do business in a certain time in a certain place. Sometimes it's expected that you go to the guy's house to collect your wages. Sometimes not. Sometimes it's expected that you meet him on the street. Sometimes it's whatever. What aim means can vary in different times and different places, etc.
What about if every month they walk in after he says yes and they used to understand aim as
By that time, you should expect
if it's the first time,
that's what we're talking about, I guess, yeah. Tanya Kumandrama Ein Kuma Duchtach Mashma. Indeed, we learn a braisa according to the opinion which we attributed to the Tanakhama, that saying yes implies wait where you are, I'm coming with the money. The Tanya, as we learn another braisa, if a worker is coming to ask for his wages from the owner, and the owner's ox gored him or his dog bit him, Potter, even though he came in with permission. Now you have to ask, am I Potter? If he came in with permission, why should the Balabas be Potter? El Allah Dakori above it. Evidently, Nichnas Birushus must mean there was sort of partial Rushus. He knocked at the door, and he said yes. So it can be called to a certain extent Rushus because this guy was under the impression that Ain meant I have Rushus to come in. But the Tanakhama is telling us that no. However,
the impression is meaning that the reality.
That's the point. In other words, even so, you can call it nichnas b'rishus because he thought he had permission to come in, but with a bright, it's telling us nevertheless he did not because he should have realized that ain means wait where you are and therefore the balabas is fine.
Ain can mean both as long as it needs to be clarified.
Right, but again, the Tanakhama holds that in general, other things being equal, it means wait where you are, and that's and the second bright is clarifying.
So the second verse
is saying what? It's showing us that Tanakhama indeed holds because the second verse has to be according to the Tanakhama. It can't be according to Achirim because Achirim said in the first verse it's Chayim. Why would the second verse, when it says Nifnas Bereshus, say Potter? Must be according to the Tanakhama, and therefore we would say the Tanakhama is that shows the Tanakhama distinguishes between two different kinds of Reshus. One where there really is Reshus, where you're saying come on in, versus where you're saying Ain, which is not total Rishus, but the guy misunderstood it as being Rishus. So now this next Mishnah, and from now for the next couple of weeks until about Dafman Test or so, we're going to be dealing with all the ins and outs of Keren. We discussed the basics of Keren before. Now we're going to get into the rest of this Perek, all of next Perek, and the beginning of the fifth Perek. We're going to be discussing all the ins and outs of Keren and particularly focusing on the payments for it, when you chayev, what you chayev in different circumstances. So as background, we know we've learned many times before, a tam, generally you pay chati nezek, more you pay nezek sholim, and now we're going to get into the specifics.
We're going to talk about kofer again?
We're going to talk about kofer eventually also. Not yet, but we'll get to it later on. So the Mishnah starts off. Shnei shvarim tamin shechavlu zezeh. If you have two oxen, both of which are tam, which injured each other, so what you do is they pay chati nezek in the overage, meaning you figure out how much, you know, this one did $100 worth of damage, the other one did $50 worth of damage, therefore there's $50 left over which has to be dealt with. Because they're both tam, then you split that 50 and you're paying 25.
It was $200
worth of damage? No, in other words, here, you have one shur, you have Reuven's shur caused $100 worth of damage to Shimon's shur. Meanwhile, Shimon's shur caused $50 worth of damage to Reuven's shur. So the $50 cancel out. $50 cancel out. You're left with $50. And because of chati nezek, then you're down to 25. Shnein mu'odin, what happens if both oxen are mu'od, mashaman mu'od, and nezek shalim. Then you pay in the overage nezek shalim. Same idea, but you pay 50 rather than 25. What if echad tam ve'echad mu'od? What if one ox is tam and one is mu'od? So it depends. Mu'od b'tam. If the mu'od caused more damage to the tam than the tam caused to the mu'od, Mishan Mamoitha, Nezek Shalom, then you pay in the overage Nezek Shalom. Because he's a Mord. Tam Mord, Mishan Mamoitha, Hati Nezek, whereas if the Tam caused more damage to the Mord than the Mord did to the Tam, then you pay only Hati Nezek in the overage. Yeah. Now, there is a lot of discussion about
them.
No, because the fact is he still needs to have done it three times. Yeah. The usual rules apply. There are a couple of interesting things in this. First of all, the Rosh holds, which not everybody agrees with this, but the Rosh holds that all of this applied only if both of them were getting at each other at the same time. If one of them started injuring the other and then the other one started fighting back, only the first one would be high if the second one would be closer, because he's just fighting to defend himself. He's entitled to do that. So there's that. There's that point. Now, there's an interesting other question that comes up. I'm facing it, so according to the Rosh, yes. I mean, one animal attacking the other. The animal being attacked has the right to fight back.
No, you could say that the master's second animal should have been there to investigate.
If he was there, but he's not responsible. Fine, but again, especially if his animal is a tam, he's not responsible to watch him the whole time. And even if the animal is a moor, fine. You know, he's responsible to watch him to make sure that it doesn't start up, not necessarily that it doesn't, yeah. Anyway, there is a different interesting point over here, which starts with like this. Tosfos asks the question, what do we need this Mishnah for? Isn't all of this fairly obvious? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers that, first of all, we're going to have later on in the Gemara. We're going to discuss a little bit in the next piece of Gemara, more in the piece after that. We're going to discuss the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, who said, actually, it's in the next, it's in the Gemara on the next Mishnah, beginning at the bottom of our Omer. We're going to discuss the opinion of Rabbi Akiva that the ox itself, the tam ox itself that caused the damage actually becomes now the property of the nizik to pay for the damage. So Tosfos says one thing is so according to Rabbi Akiva, then you might argue, what do you mean you cancel out the amounts of damage? The as soon as the one ox damaged the other, it became liable. The guy owns it, or at least owns it partially. No, it depends on the calculation. We'll see in the Gemara over there. It depends on how much the respective ox and on the damage are worth. But we're talking about if the ox is only worth as much as what has to be paid for a right. Tam, then according to Rabbi Akiva, he gets it. And if not, then they become partners in it. We'll see about that in the Gemara. No, the halacha is not like that. I don't think so, no. Actually, they are. Actually, it is, yeah. Wait, we'll get there. We'll get there. Wait. Anyway, so that's one thing Tosfos says. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you could still have a case. What if one of the oxen afterwards gets lost or dies or whatever? You might think that one of them can say, well, look, you know, okay, your ox died. My ox died. You can't collect from it. Tough luck. No, we don't say that. Anyway, that's Tosfos. However, the Rosh has a whole different explanation, which is, according to the Rosh, there is a major chiddush in the Mishnah. The Rosh argues.
When he says that you're talking about the second Mishnah,
No. The reason why our Mishnah is needed is according to Rabbi Akiva's opinion, which we're going to discuss in the Gemara after the next Mishnah. Anyway, the Rosh has a whole different explanation. The Rosh explains that when you think about it, if you have a moored ox that damaged a tam one, you're talking about you have to figure out the amounts of damage, and then you have to, and then you subtract one from the other, and then you pay nezek shalom or chatzi nezek, as the case may be. Or do you go, or think of it like this. If you have, for example, a moored ox caused $50 worth of damage to the other one, a tam ox caused $40 worth of damage to the moored, so the difference is $10. So one way of looking at it is all you pay is $10. The other way of looking at it, though, is when you think about it, the tam would only be responsible for $20. So maybe you say you do 50 minus 20, and the owner of the moored ox is responsible for 30. So the Rosh says, no, the Chiddush of the Mishnah is you don't say that. You go according to the actual amounts of damage, not the amounts that are paid. On the other hand, the Nemukah Yosef says you do go according to the amounts that are paid, which implicitly agrees with Tosfos, because then you're back to Tosfos' question, so what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? Wouldn't that be obvious? And therefore Tosfos to give other answers why the Mishnah is needed.
You don't start weighing each part.
So according to the Rosh, you weigh strictly according to the damage. You imagine to begin with as if both of them were mu'adim, and you figure out the difference, and then that's the chiddush that you do the nezek shalom for that amount, or chatzi nezek as the case may be. According to the Mokah Yosef, and implicitly according to Tosfos, you weigh according to the actual amount that are paid. Yeah. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Similarly, if you have two people who injured each other, same idea then, you figure out the difference in the amount of damage, and then the one who caused the more damage pays nezek shalom, because again, other more low.
Right, so what's the share?
Because we're going to talk about in the Gemara, there's a difference between a shur and a person, we're going to talk about there's a difference of what you're paying for. You're paying only nezek, or you're paying also ripui and sire and so forth. But that needs to be mentioned also. Well, that we'll see in the Gemara. What happens if a person injures a shur which is muad, and the shur which is muad injures the person, so they get into a scrap, and each of them has beat up the other. Either one is going to pay of the overage nezek shalom, because other muad la'olam, the shur is muad, therefore you have a muad against the muad, same idea. In fact, by the way, the Malachas Shlomo on the Mishnah, Mishnayah says that's what our Mishnah is doing over here. Before, all this time we've been talking about nezakim of a person and other muad la'olam. So now, continuing of that, we're discussing a case where a person is muad and a shur is muad also, and that therefore ends up segueing into all the different discussions about a shur muad and what you pay in the various cases. Tamba Adam, what happens though if, what about Adam but Tamba Adam? What about if it was a person who was fighting with a shur that was a tam? So then, Adam but Tam, if the person did more damage to the shur than the shur did to him, Mashalim Amosu Nezek Shalom, and he pays Nezek Shalom for the extra, because again, he's an Adam, he's Muad. Tamba Adam, Mashalim Amosu, Chati Nezek. No, we're talking about a normal person, Ben and Ben Dab. Later, we'll talk about later in the Masechta. We'll talk about Cheresh Shoj B'Katan Sof Tugiyot and Ra. The Mishnah is going to tell us in the eighth Cheresh. You're in a bad way if you tangle with them, because they're Potter for any damage they cause to you. They can't be responsible for their actions, but you're fully responsible for any damage you cause to them.
What about a woman?
We'll see about that over there. It's Tugiyot and Ra in a different sense. She doesn't have assets of her own. Therefore, at the moment, you can't collect anything. But eventually, if her husband dies, you're divorcing her, and she does have assets, then you'll be able to collect from her then. Yeah, we'll get to that later on. Okay, yeah. Okay. So, okay. Shalom Moshe Chassi Nezek. Now, here comes the Chiddush. Sheba Kiva Omer. No, Af Tam Shachavah Ba'adam. Even if a Shur Tam injures a person, Mishalom Moshe Nezek Shalom. Nevertheless, that Tam's owner is going to pay Nezek Shalom on the overage, even though it's Tam, and you would think it's only Chassi Nezek, but in this case, because it injured a person, Nezek Shalom. Why will see in the Gemara? Hello? The Gemara starts that. Turn it up. The Pasuk says, Kamishpat hazeh ya'ati lo. The Pasuk says that if an ox, the Pasuk talks about if a shur kills a person, so stokhu yisakal ashur, the ox has to be stoned, and the baal ashur noki, etc., etc. Then the Pasuk continues, Ben yugach ha'bach yugach, whether the shur killed a boy or a girl, Kamishpat hazeh ya'ati lo, the same rules are done to it. Skila, and then kofer. Because that's what the Torah says. I don't know what the reason behind it is. Skila for the animal and kofer for the owner if the animal was born. Yeah. Okay. So what does that mean? Kamishpat hazeh ya'ati lo. What does that mean according to this rule? So it means kmishpat shur b'shur, kach mishpat shur b'adam. It means the same rules that apply to a shur injuring another shur, the same rules apply to a shur injuring a person. In other words, we're taking this kamishpat hazeya also a little bit out of context. In context, the pasuk is talking about where the shur killed an adult or a child or whatever, but we're taking it a little bit out of context and saying that these words are telling us what happens if the shur injures the person. So you do kamishpat hazeh, meaning the same mishpat that's going to be described in the later psukim about if one shur injures another, the same rules are going to apply if a shur injures a person. Therefore, ma shur b'shur tam b'sham tati nezik amur nezik shal. That's how we interpret the pasuk. That's how the chacham are interpreting the pasuk. So the same rule as applies that if it's a tam ox that caused injury, it pays chati nezik, and if it was a mur, it pays nezik shal. When it's injuring another ox, afshur b'adam, the same thing. When a shur injures a person, tam b'sham chati nezik amur nezik shal. Same rule. Tamish b'tazeh ya'atulah. The same rule.
So what does Rabbi Akiva say?
Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kamishpat Hazeh means Katachtan V'Leke Elyon. Rabbi Akiva says that no. Kamishpat Hazeh Ya'oteloi, so what is it? There's Tachtan and there's Elyon. Namely, leaving aside the psukim that talk later on about a shur injuring another shur.
Right.
You have, at the beginning, when the Torah is talking about a shur injuring a person, killing a person, actually, it starts by describing the case where the ox is a tam. Then it continues with the case where the ox is a moor. So the Chachamim are saying, for reasons that we'll talk about soon, that kamishpat hazeh ya'oteloi means depending on the circumstances. Tam is tam, moor is moor.
What's not the name?
Rabbi Akiva is saying, katachten v'leke elyon. It means that you ought, kamishpat hazeh means the mishpat of the last mentioned thing. The last mentioned thing right before that is the case with the ox of the mu'ad. Right before this pasuk, the previous pasuk is talking about the case where the ox is mu'ad, being shown nagafum mitzmel shetshoim. So Rabbi Akiva is saying, when it says kamishpat hazeh ya'oteloi, it means hazeh is the last mentioned thing. It refers to the last mentioned thing, which is that we treat the animal as a mu'ad always if it injured a person. Katachtan, like the lower one, but like Ke'elia, not like the earlier pasuk, which describes when the ox was attacked. The latter one, right? But like that. Now, he continues, Yachol Mashalim Min Hal, meaning, in other words, that an ox that injures a person is always going to pay Nezik Shalim, regardless whether it was a tam or a mu'ad. Now, Rabbi Akiva continues.
That logic, he should pay more if he's a mu'ad.
No.
If the tam pays Nezik Shalim.
No, first of all, Dai Lachom and Adin Lachom.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't want
that. Rabbi Akiva, we found Rabbi Akiva hold of it. Rabbi Akiva passes that, yeah. Yachol Mashalim Min Hal, yeah. Besides, anyway, the pasuk says kamishpat hazeh according to these rules. These rules are the maximum in nezek shalom. Anyway, continues Rabbi Akiva, yachol mashalim min aliyah. In that case, if we're saying that the shur, even though in principle at the time we're nevertheless making it pay nezek shalom for injuring a person, in that case, does that mean that we treat it completely like a muad in the sense that the owner is responsible to pay min aliyah, that he pays mimeitav haaretz from the best of his property or from the best of his land or metalfalin or what have you, and not just that cast at the value of the shur like it will be by a time?
Are we asking?
Rabbi Akiva is asking that. Rabbi Akiva himself is saying, Talmud Loima, no, the pasuk says, Ye also loy, this shall be done to him. The to him implies, Migufa Mishalim, that you still only pay out of the body of the animal, the Enim Mishalim in Aliyah, you still don't pay Minhaliyah. In other words, Rabbi Akiva is saying, in this case, when the animal is a tam and it injures a person, you're sort of treating it as a hybrid, as a mixture of a tam and a mord. You're making it like a mord in the sense that he has to pay Nezik Shalim, but you're making him like a tam that he still only pays that Nezik Shalim Migufa. And therefore, if the value of the nezek is more than the value of the animal's own goof, then that's all you pay is the value of the animal's own goof. You don't go beyond that. Just as if it was chati nezek by another shur. Okay. So that's a Rabbi Akiva darshan. But Rabban on zeh level, okay, what are the Rabban? Rabbi Akiva is using kamishpat hazeh, meaning last name, saying you treat it like a muad, not like a tam. The only reason he says you don't treat it completely like a muad is because you also love it. What are the Rabban on doing with the word zeh? The answer is Lepoitrim, Abad's bottom. They use the word zeh for a different word. It teaches us that if a shur injures a person, you're potter from paying all the other four kinds of nezek. You don't pay the owner of the ox, doesn't pay sar and ripri and so forth. Because as we learned before, you only do that when one person injures another, not when a shur.
Rabbi Akiva.
Rabbi Akiva, what would he answer to that? That where do you know that he's potter from Abad's bottom? Naftalim, Ishkiyit, and Mumbamit, he learns it from the pasuk that we previously quoted a few days ago. If one person causes an injury, a defect in somebody else, in another person, implying Ishbamit, so implying only if one person injures another, not if a Shur injures. So therefore, you know from there that your pasuk.
What was the thing?
Ishkiyit and Mumbamit. So the pasuk of Kasher, also Kenya, also Loy, whatever he did shall be done to him, Ayin Takasayin, etc. And we learn from that that it means not nezek, because nezek is discussed elsewhere in the Torah. It means tzar. It means tzar, and by extension it means the other ones as well. And what would the Rabbanan answer to that? They would say, imeahi, if you only had that pasuk ishkiyit and mumbam misif and parkes emer, you would say have a minute tzar l'chude. You would say fine. If a shur injures a person, the owner of the shur is pasuk from paying for tzar, fine. But you would think maybe he would still be on the hook for Ritwi and Shevet, because the difference is, Tsar, and Tosus points out also Boshes, there's not really a financial loss involved. Tsar is you're paying him sort of for the difference between, let's say, if you had to have this kind of injury done to you, you could have had it done under anesthesia, versus not, you're paying the difference. But that's not a monetary, it's not really a monetary loss that you suffered. It's compensating him for his pain, but there's no direct, you can't say that he lost X amount by having this tzar. You can say he lost X amount by having this nezek in the sense that, for example, you know, now his hand is destroyed and now he can't do work with it anymore. He lost actual money by ripui and shevet. He's going to need to pay doctor's bills and he's out of work for a while. Tsar, and Tosis points out, Boshes, there's no financial loss that he has. Those are to compensate. You know, it's sort of like what happened in American law. You know, they have the difference between compensatory damages and punitive damages, right? So Tsar and Boshes are a little more, they're not totally, but they're a little more, a bit more like punitive damages. In the sense that, you know, this person suffered pain, this person suffered embarrassment, you know, he is owed X amount for that. But then there's the actual dollar amount that, you know, you can bet that he had to put out money for, that he lost money, that he's never going to be able to work a certain job.
Talk about, but not no fault.
Okay.
The five energies are exactly the same.
No, we're not talking about fault.
Here we are.
The point is, there's a custom that, okay, fine, so you want to call it that way. Okay, so when it comes to a shur, though, the point is that Abanon is saying, you would think, to distinguish between ripui and shevet, where the person has actually suffered an actual financial loss, versus tsar and boshes, where he's not. Therefore, emolitim, you would think maybe the owner of the shur is at least responsible to pay for ripui and shevet. You would think you have to give it to him. Kamash malon, and therefore the chiddush is that not. So according to the Abanon, in other words, you need both psukim. Whereas Rabbi Akiva does not accept that distinction. The Dalet Dvarim, generally speaking, go together always, except that we said that Boshes is only if you meant to do it. So therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, you only need the one pasuk from Emor, and therefore you have the word Hazeh, Tamishpat Hazeh. You're also available to teach us the Jerusha about what you do when a Tam injures a person. Mishnah says, Shur Shavim Mana Shenorach Shur Shavim Asayim. Suppose that a shur that is worth a mana, 100 zuz, it gores a shur that's worth 200 and kills it. The ain't unavail enough yopakum. The carcass of the dead animal is not worth anything. So now the guy has suffered $200 of loss. Noitel, a shur, in that case, he takes the shur, we're talking a tam over here, that the and therefore the only chassi nezet. So therefore, he takes that shirt, that's the $100, that's the 100 zuz, and therefore, that's it, the thing is paid off. Well, the Gemara says, Nasnissin mani Rabbi Akiva. So we see that our Mishnah has to be according to Rabbi Akiva. The Tanya, as we learn in a Blaisa, when we say that... No, we're talking Chassi Nezek. We're talking Chassi Nezek, because if it was Nezek Sholid, he wouldn't be taking the shirt at all. The guy is responsible for paying $200 out of his Mechassin. That's what we're going to be discussing. That's exactly what the Gemara is going to be taking up.
What?
Can't he just give him $100 instead of giving the shur? That's between the Gemara and Tosfos. And the other proportion, maybe that is exactly what we'll be taking up. Just call it there. Take a Gemara and... Okay. Netanya, we learn in a B'lai. So when we say, in this case, the guy is responsible for $100 because that was a Chassi Nezek. How do you do it? Yushav Mashur based in Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says what you do is you evaluate the value of the dead shur and the live shur in Beis Din, And since you find that, since you find in this case that the amount that has to be paid is 100, then fine, the guy's on the hook to pay 100 to pay 100. He doesn't necessarily the nizik is not necessarily entitled to the shur itself. He's just entitled to $100 out of the guy's nechassim. And again, you know, if the damage was more than 100, as Rabbi Shmuel is going to agree, he only gets 100 because that's the value of the shur. But here, Rabbi Akiva and Rehuchot Asher. Rabbi Akiva says that no, the shur goes definitively over to the nizik. The nizik can take the shur itself.
Regardless.
Right.
Regardless of the amount.
No, not regardless of the amount. No.
If the nezek
is more than the value of the shur, that's it. He loses the rest. If the shur is more than the value of the nezek, then as the Gemara is going to say, they become partners. It means that now the nizik, for example, is now owns $100 of the value of the shur, and the mazik owns the rest of it. Yeah. So, the ma'akamik, what's the underlying machlokes? Rabbi Shmuel said about choyvu. Rabbi Shmuel holds that the nizik is considered like a bal choyv, like a creditor. Therefore, bezuzil demazikle. So, therefore, the mazik, he owes him a certain amount in money. Doesn't necessarily have to give him the shur per se. You can give him money. Rabbi Akiva,
he doesn't have. Then he has to sell the shirt.
Whatever, obviously, he has to pay him somehow. So yeah, if he doesn't have anything else, he'll have to sell the shirt. Sure, but if he has. Rabbi Akiva saw the shutvin, whereas Rabbi Akiva would hold that they're considered partners. So again, if the amount of, if the value of the shur is more than the chassi nezek, fine, so he'll become a partner to that extent. Like this, where the nezek is the exact value of the shur itself, then fine, he becomes 100% partner, meaning that he owns the shur now.
Doesn't bring Sean Bay, does it?
Well, exactly. Oh, I say that.
Because who wants to be partner with someone who's gored?
It happened one time. Once in a while, it can happen. An animal goes crazy. You know. Okay. The Kamisvigi Baha'i Kra. What they're actually arguing about is the meaning of the pasuk. When the pasuk says, "Mocharas asher achai v'chatzur es katzur," the pasuk says they should sell. The pasuk describes that one shur kills another one. So it says, "Mocharas asher achai," they should sell the live shur v'chatzur es katzur and divide the money. And then the pasuk continues, "Regardless of the achzur," the dead one they also divide. So Rabbi Shmuel saw the Beit Dina Kamazir Rahman. So Rabbi Shmuel figures that the pasuk is addressing the Beis Din. The Torah is telling the Beis Din, you have to figure out the value of this ox, and Machu, you are responsible for making sure that this ox is sold and the money is divided. Again, obviously, if the guy has no other assets other than the shur. Rabbi Akiva says the nizik and mazik, mazal rahmana. Whereas Rabbi Akiva holds that the Torah is telling the nizik and the mazik themselves, you guys are responsible for dividing the ox between you, meaning that there now becomes a partnership. Much as my binayu, so what's the practical difference between the two cases? And the answer is, dishe nizik ita binayu. The difference between...
Machu could mean also the Beis Din.
Yeah, that's the thing. Rabbi Shmuel holds that the Beis Din has to sell it. And then and Rabbi Akiva holds it means the mazik and the nizik. Dishe nizik ita binayu. The practical difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would be, what if now the nizik went and was makdish this animal? According to Rabbi Shmuel, he has no ability to do so because he's not necessarily going to be getting the animal. So there's no reason to think that it belongs to him yet. According to Rabbi Akiva, in a certain sense, the animal already is. In this case particularly, if he owns it 100% because the chassi nezek is 100 and the animal is valued at 100, then fine, the animal effectively belongs to him already. Therefore, he can be makdish it. Which, by the way, isn't so simple, actually. Mepharshim asks as well. Tosfos discusses, a number of other Rishonim discuss the question, what about, aren't there, not necessarily, are there cases where he's going to end up with the shur? First of all, well, for one point is actually, one point is, that some of Rishonim point out, we know that Moedu is Knas Potter. We know that we've established already before that if you go to Beis Din and voluntarily admit, I owe this Knas, then you're going to be Potter from it. Chassi Nezek is a Knas, as we've discussed in the first paragraph. If the owner of the shur were to go to Beis Din and say, I admit, before Adim come, I admit that my shur killed the other guy's shur, then he'll be potter. There'll be no knas. So the other guy's not going to end up getting the shur. Why is Rabbi Akiva considering that he has it to the extent that he could already be makdish it? There's a number of answers. The Ravid gives an interesting answer. The Ravid says, this rule of murder of knas potter applies to most kinds of knas, namely the kinds of knas where it's a knas over and above what the guy owes. For example, Shlomo Kefil is classic knas. The ganav is already responsible to return the principal, the amount that he stole. The fact that you're making him pay double or was an ox or a sheep, or he stole and sold it, as we'll discuss in the seventh parak, that he has to pay four or five, that's a classic knas. That's a classic kind of knas, and that's the kind of thing where he's motivated to knas bottle. A case like this, where after all the other guy suffered a loss and you're having to pay half of it, fine, it's a knas in the sense you can't judge it in Bavel, you need smuchim, etc. But the Raivad wants to say not in the sense that motive a knas bottle. Therefore, according to the Raivad, it's a given. The guy is gonna end up at the shur according to the Rav Akiva.
Can you say that not even though they shoot him? It's some one guy patur, but when they shoot him.
No. They only become shutim because of the knas. Because of the knas, because the mazik owes half the damages, therefore this other guy becomes a shutim in the animal. And again, if the animal is worth 100% of the chati nezek, then that's what he takes. Anyway, there's other answers as well, including there's a good deal of discussion among Rishonim with a number of different opinions. Maybe this machlokes of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, maybe it only applies before the Beis Din has judged the case. Maybe after the Beis Din has judged the case, Rabbi Shmuel would agree that the animal already belongs to the mazik at that point, even before he actually paid. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe the machlokes is before. Maybe before Gemara Din, everybody would agree that it's not. And the question would be after Gemara Din. And then those are other ways of looking at it also. Anyway,
let's decide on a case by case basis.
Because not. I mean, you have to have a black letter halacha. You have to have a halacha one way or the other. You can't get.
What? It became
definitively the property of the nizik. Again, provided that it's equal to or less than the chati nizik. That's what we're saying. He can be makrish. Now,
of
the nizik, of the one whose ox was killed by this one. The nizik is going to be the nizik, the one who's now is the new owner of this animal. Now, Tosfos points out that actually there are a number of other ikabinayas, there are a number of other practical differences you could argue there are between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. For example, one of them is that boy who was here just before, I don't know his name, by the way. Does the mazik have the ability to say, you know what, it's true, the nezik was 100, the chati nezik was 100, the animal is worth 100, you should be able to take the animal. However, instead, I'd like to keep this animal, let me offer you $100 instead. Can he do that or not? According to Rabbi Shmuel, yes. According to Rabbi Akiva, maybe not. Another question would be, which the Gemara is actually going to be discussing on Amud Beis, what if the mazik goes and sells the animal? If the nizik is already considered to be the owner of the animal, then he can't. If not, then he could. So Bominei Rabba Mir Rabba Nachman. Rabba asked Rabba Nachman the following question. Machre mazik to Rabbi Shmuel Mahu. According to Rabbi Shmuel, what if the mazik sells the animal? Do we say kiven to Rabbi Shmuel Bar Choyv? Since after Rabbi Shmuel is just saying that the nizik is considered a Bar Choyv, the zuzi who demasikle, it's just that the mazik owes him a certain amount of money. Therefore, mochel, fine. The animal itself is not necessarily, you know, is not necessarily involved in the whole thing. The sale is still a valid sale. A dilma, or maybe kiven to meshavad leila nizik. Since after all, there is a shibud on it to the nizik, because if he doesn't end up giving him money, then the nizik is going to be entitled to take the animal. Lav kol kamine. Maybe he doesn't have the ability to sell it. Well, wait. You know, normally not. But wait, we're going to talk about it like an apusiki. It's like an apusiki. It's like a mortgage on it. It's like as if it was declared. We'll talk about it soon. We'll talk about that. It's considered as if the equivalent of when you lend somebody money and he says, "I'm guaranteeing that you can take this off or this whatever metalfalin as payment for it." That's called an apusiki.
And you say
effectively, that's what we're saying. Okay. Amalei ein mocher. So Rav Nachman tells him, "Yes, the sale is taka not valid." Okay, Valtanya Mocher and Mocher. So Rava asked him, what about there's another Braisa that says that if you sold it, it is considered valid? Okay, so Rav Nachman says, fine, it's considered a valid sale. Chosev Gevei, fine, but it still means a Nizek will have the ability to take it from that other person.
To take it from that person, and then
that person, I guess, will go after the original Mazik, and yeah. Okay, so the question is, Chimach, Chosev Gevei, Lama Mocher. Fine. So, in what sense is it considered a valid sale? If the nizik any time can go and take it from the third party, in what sense can you consider it a valid sale? The answer is liridia. It is a valid sale in the sense as far as plowing. which means, Rashi says it means, suppose that, okay, so we have Reuben, Shimon, and Levi over here. Reuben sure killed Shimon sure. So now Reuben is responsible to pay Shimon, and we said therefore there's a shibud on the sure. Meanwhile, Reuben went and sold the sure to Levi. We're saying Rav Nachman is saying Shimon is going to have the right to go to Levi and take that sure away to pay off for the chati nezek. However, Rashi says, meanwhile, if Levi has plowed with this animal, he's not going to have to reimburse Shimon. He's not going to have to pay Shimon for the fact that he effectively used his cow to plow. That's how Rashi explains it. The Rashba has a bunch of questions on Rashi, among others, that even if Levi were Gazlan, the halacha is he wouldn't have to pay for the value of the plowing. Why would we think over here he should have to? And therefore, the Rashba has a different explanation, that it means that even Mahathachila, he can go ahead and plow with it, because until point comes when Shimon takes it away from him, it was a valid sale. He's perfectly entitled to plow with it until the time when Shimon shows up and then demands it from him.
That's the question. I mean, you can say from the time of Shibu, the sale is incorrect.
But that's what Rav Nachman is saying, according to the Rashba, but that's not the case. The sale is a valid sale. The guy can start using it. However, Shimon retains the right. If he can't get any satisfaction from Reuben, then he has the right to go to Levi and take that animal away. It's not essentially different, you know, than the way, for example, I mean, think of it. If it were instead of a shur, if it were a field, you know, if Reuben owes Shimon money and then he went and sold one of his fields to Levi, Levi's perfectly entitled to plow and plant and do whatever he wants with that field, but Shimon still has a lien on it. So eventually, if Shimon can't get paid by Reuben, then he's going to go after Levi and get the field. It doesn't mean that Levi has to leave the field sitting empty meanwhile. So according to the Rashba, would be the same smart over here. So the question is, what both of you were asking, Shmamina Levi or Morcha Metalpilin based in Draven Lamehem. So what are you telling me, that if a person borrows money and then he sells in Metalpilin based in collection of Metalpilin, what are you talking about, a shibud on a shirt? The answer is shiny hustle. It's different in this case. The commander, sorry, Apusiki, dummy, because it's the equivalent of having made this shur and Apusiki. He himself didn't explicitly make it, but Rashi says the Torah effectively has made this shur into an Apusiki. The Torah has declared... You can, yes. We've learned before, and in fact, the Gemara is going to quote something in that connection now, something that we've learned before as well. But yes, you can declare anything, obviously.
Any metaphor?
Yes.
Or just a sure?
Anything. The question is, Omar Rava, but how does that work? Didn't Rava say, Rava just said that if a person declared his Eved to be an Apusiki, and then he sold him, the Baal Chayv is able to collect from that Eved. We learned this actually earlier in our Masechta, that an Eved is. But an Eved, for certain purposes, is considered like Haifa. We learned earlier in Masechta, when we discussed this, or actually, I think it was Kiddushin, we talked about that. No, it was earlier in the chapter. We talked about that an eved may be considered kalka for certain purposes, but like it'll be considered like kalka when it comes to dinim d'oraisa, but like metalpilin when it comes to dinim d'rabbana. The whole concept of apusiki, the whole concept of shibud, the whole concept of shibud in general, is a machlokas in a number of places in Shas, notably in Baba Basra, whether shibud d'oraisa or not. If we take the view that Shibuddha is not Jaredaisa, I mean, I'm sure there's no such thing as a Shibud, the whole thing is only Mijabbanon, then very well, an Eved is, an Eved therefore is the Talpulim when it comes to things that are Bonon. Tosfos has made that point over there. Okay, so anyway, so if you make your Eved an Apusiki, Umochre, and then you sold it, then the creditor is still able to collect by taking that Eved. On the other hand, Shure Apusiki, but if he made his Shure to be an Apusiki, Umochre, and then he sold that Shure, and Balchoy Gravemenu. And the Baal cannot. So what are you telling me over here that the Torah makes it like an Apusiki and therefore Shimon's going to be entitled to collect? In a regular case of Apusiki, you can't. Yes. No, it's not a Braita. It's a statement of Rava. It's a statement of Rava. But Rava himself is discussing over here with Rav Nachman this whole issue. The answer is, it's different in this case. Eved, my time, why are you saying that you're able to collect from an Eved when it's an Apusiki, Mishum de Islai Kola? Because when an Eved is sold, not when an Eved is sold, when there's a Shibud on an Eved, there's a coil about it. Everybody knows what the circumstances are with Avadim. Well, whereas normally with a Shur, not normally, Shivarim are just bought and sold in both. But in this case, given the Naga, in this case, since the ox already gored, Kola Islay, therefore there is already a coil on it, the Torah not Chana Korle. People start calling it the goring ox, even before it officially became a moor.
It's not a moor.
Yeah, right.
Even while it's a camp. But still, the very fact that there was a goring, people already talk about it. People already know from then on what's going on with the dog. I mean, especially, if anything, before I should point out, in a certain sense, more so with the tam than with the moor. Precisely because of the tam, you can only be paid the gufa. You're only going to be getting paid to maximum the value of the ox. Therefore, whatever happens after that, people keep paying the tractor. People pay, whereas on the contrary, once the ox is the moor, you're going to be paying min halviyah regardless. The people don't really care. But yes. Yeah. Going back, by the way, I forgot to mention before when I was mentioning the point about how according to Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara assuming the Nizik can be makdish this ox if he doesn't actually own it. What about Moedib Knas Potter? So I mentioned the answer with Ravid. Tosfos here, I forgot, it was on Amud Beis, but here Tosfos gives a different answer. Yes, if Moedib Knas, he'll be Potter. He hasn't yet been Moedib. As long as he's not Moedib, we're not going to assume he's going to.
Yeah.
If he ends up being Moedib, then yeah, he'll be able to keep the ox because he'll be potter from the snap. But as long as he hasn't, well, that's close to this tomorrow. As long as he hasn't been Moedib, the fact is he hasn't been Moedib, we would assume this ox is going to end up going to the market.
Right.
Okay.
Isn't that self-understood?
No, not necessarily, because on the face of it, okay, but he still has the ability to. But according to Tosfos, as long as he has it, you still assume that he's not going to. And again, you have the Ravid's answer that Moedib of Knas does not potter you from Chatzi Nezek. You have a number of other answers. Anyway, if you sell the ox after it's meshubad for the chati nezek, then it's not a valid sale. Hikdushay mukdash. However, if you declared it hekdish, it is considered hekdish. The hekdash machrei man. Who sold it at that point? Ilema mazik machrei. Are you going to say that it's the mazik that sold it, rather than giving it to the nizek? Well, then ein mocher. So you're saying it's not sold. Mani Rav Akiva. Evidently, that would have to be according to Rav Akiva. Dama hochlat asher. Where, after all, he said before that the sher is considered the property of the nizek at that point. Therefore, the mazik has no ability to sell it. However, hekdish mukdash. But if you're saying that if you declare it hekdish, then it's considered valid hekdish. Asan Rav Shmuel. Then that could only be according to Rav Shmuel. Dama yusha masher beisdin, who says that the sher has to be evaluated in beisdin, and the nizik is only on the hook to pay the value of the sher, not necessarily the sher itself. Therefore, the mazik still has the ability to be makdish that sher as long as he has another $100 available to pay the guy.
That's why.
So the problem is the braisa is self-contradictory.
Yeah.
The problem is the braisa is self-contradictory. And if you're going to argue elam nizik machroi. So if you're going to say that the case is, remember, the Braisa didn't specify who sold it or who was being makdashed. So if you're going to assume that the Braisa is implying that it's the Nizik that sold it, then you're saying Mochre Eini Mocher. So if you're saying the sale is not a valid sale, Mani Rabbi Shmuel, then that would have to be according to Rabbi Shmuel, because the Nizik doesn't necessarily own the box. He may or may not end up getting it. He's very likely not to, because he's just supposed to get $100, which might very well be money. On the other hand, if you say that hekdish, that valid hekdish, that goes according to Rav Akiva. The mazik already owns it. So again, what is the braisa? Whose opinion is the braisa like? It seems to be half of it is according to Rav Shmuel, half of it is according to Rav Akiva, and you don't expect that in one sense. Now, the la'olam mazik. No, we have to say that it's talking about that mazik is the one who sold it or was makdish it. The divrei hakol macher eni macher afilu Rav Shmuel. Now, unlike what we were thinking before, that maybe there might be, actually the Gemara didn't spell out that there might be a difference, but we assumed that there might have been a difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva as far as if you sold it. Maybe it would be considered a valid sale according to Rabbi Shmuel, because after all, the Nizik is not necessarily going to get the ox. He only has a shibud on the money, not necessarily on the ox per se. No, we're going to say, after Rabbi Shmuel, even according to Rabbi Shmuel, he will agree that the sale is not a valid sale. Because after all, there is a shibud on it to the Nizik. And the fact of the matter is, if the Nizik does not end up getting the $100 in cash or metalcillin or what have you, then he's going to take the ox. So yeah, there is still a possibility, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel would say you can't go and sell it.
As long as he hasn't been paid,
yeah.
He cannot sell it.
On the other hand, Hikdushe Mukdash Afilu Rabbi Akiva. On the other hand, if the Mazik was Mukdashit, then that works even according to Rabbi Akiva. Now, what do we mean mukdash? Not in the sense that it's a full-fledged, we're saying that the mazik is makadish.
Okay,
well, So Afilu Rav Akiva. So even according to Rav Akiva, it doesn't mean that it becomes full-fledged hekdesh. It just means that it has a certain din of hekdesh, namely Mishum de Rav Abohu. The reason is because of what Rav Abohu said. The Amar Rav Abohu. Rav Abohu describes the case. There's a case in Erchin. The case over there is that a person is makdish his property, but meanwhile he has debts that he owes to creditors. He has a ksuba that has to be paid off. Now, what happens? Those people have to be able to collect their things, but how can they collect them from hekdesh? So the din is, on the face of it, you should say, whatever he was makdish that needs to be used to pay them can't be hekdesh. Their shibud came first. However, Rav Abohu says that nevertheless, something has to be paid to hekdesh. And then they can collect theirs. Because you make zera, you don't want people to think that something that's full-fledged hekdesh can leave the property of hekdesh without being redeemed. So even though in that case it wasn't full-fledged hekdesh because he had no ability to be makdish something that's already under a shibud to somebody else, nevertheless, you still make him pay. You still make a token amount. Similarly, over here, when we say hekdesh mukdash, does not mean if the mazik is makdash it has the ability to become 100% kaddish. But it means if the nizik wants to use this animal, he's going to have to pay a prutta, or maybe the mazik is going to have to pay a prutta. Somebody is going to have to pay a prutta to hekdesh in order for it to be yet.
So they both agree in a way.
Yeah. Tosfos discusses what exactly we have learned in a few places in the Gemara a concept that hektish makia midev shibud, that actually hektish does have the ability to override a shibud. So why wouldn't it have been? We know it in a couple of places here and there. So then in that case, why wouldn't we say over here if the guy's makdish it does have the ability to undo the shibud? So Tosfos discusses that maybe we're talking about over here at the Baal Mum, for example, so therefore it's not touching his bayak, it's not destined to be brought as a korban, it's only touching bedek, it's only kedushas damim, it only has a monetary kedusha.
So if there's no mum, let's say.
If there's no mum, that might be different. So then Tosfos learns that might be different, because then hektish mafti amidei shibud, because then hektish undoes the shibud.
In other words, just a thing for the hektish would keep it the whole thing.
Yeah. That then it would be full-fledged hektish, yeah. There's a number of opinions among Rishonim. Tosfos alludes to it over here a little bit, but there are a number of opinions among Rishonim about the details of the hektish mafti amidei shibud, when it applies, does it apply only to kedushas Dhamim, does it apply only to Kedushas Guf, or does it apply maybe to Kedushas Dhamim as well? Are there exceptions there, etc.?
Does it apply to Nezikin?
That's another part of the discussion. Yeah. Turn it up on. Shertam Shehizik. Shertam causes damage. Ad Shalai Amad Bedin. So before the case has been brought to Beis Din, Mocher, if the Mazik sells it, it is a valid sale. If he's makdish, it's considered a valid hekdesh. According to everybody on the face of it. Well, wait. We'll see as we go through who this braita is like. It might be only according to Rabbi Shmuel, or it might be. If he shechted the animal or gave it away as a present, masha also what he did is considered done. It's valid.
Done.
Yeah. However, Misha Omad Badin, however, if it's after the case was already judged and based in, which at that point the animal is already under a shibud, so therefore according to Rabbi Akiva it belongs to the Nizik at that point. Therefore Machra Eini Machra. So now if the Mazik sells it, it's not considered a valid sale. Like Disha Eini Machra, if he's Makdish, it's not valid. Wait. Shachtav Enasna Matana Le'asav Le'kum. Actually, so that's what I'm mentioning. That's what I'm saying. There is a discussion among the Rishonim. Is it possible maybe that this Braita would be not only according to Rabbi Shmuel, but even according to Rabbi Akiva, or the other way around, not only according to Rabbi Akiva, but even according to Rabbi Shmuel. Once Amar Badin, as we said before in the Gemara, that even though once Amar Badin, Rabbi Shmuel does agree, there's a certain shibud on it. You can't just go and sell it willy nilly. But besides that, also
the Mishnah never said even after the din.
The Gemara didn't specify. But again, there's machlokes among the Achronim. The Ketzois discusses it. The Chazanish discusses it. There's a number of Achronim discuss the question: is the machlokes of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva maybe only before Gemara din, but not after it, or maybe vice versa? Yeah. Okay.
Maybe after
Omer Badin is when they have machlokes. whether it's considered the property of the mazik at that point. Maybe before Gemar Din, everybody would agree it's not. Or the other way around. Maybe before Gemar Din, maybe during Gemar Din, there's a machlokas whether yes or not. But after Gemar Din, it definitely is. A number of different ways of looking at it. Anyway, first we're going to discuss the whole. First we're going to quote the whole brayta. Then we're going to start analyzing it. Kodmu bali chovis vihigbihu. What happens if creditors came and picked up the animal, meaning that they were zoche in it? Bein chov ad shlehizik, bein hizik ad shlehov. Regardless whether the debt that the owner of this ox owed came before the nezek, or the nezek came before the chov, loy also v'loiklum, what they did doesn't count for anything. L'fishei mishalim al megufay, because the nezek is only going to be paid out of the body of the animal. So if they take away the animal, then there's nothing to be paid. Well, again, we're going to analyze that. We're going to analyze that later. That the Gemara is going to get to at the bottom of this amud and the top of the next one.
If they took the animal,
even if their chov came before the nezek, they're not allowed to do that. So that we'll get to later. Again, let's go through the whole price, and then we'll start analyzing it. Mu'ad shehizik. Now this is all the time. On the other hand, if a mu'ad called the hezik, ben shalom b'din, ben shalom b'din, regardless whether it was brought to Beis Din or not, machrei mo, since there's no shibud on the body of the animal, because anyway paid min haliyah, therefore machrei mo, if the mazik sells the animal, it's a valid sale. Hikdishen mo, if he's not dishes, it's a valid hikdish. Shachter v'nosnim atonim ha'sha'asa asu, if he shechts it or gives it away as a present, what he did is valid. Kodma balechovis v'higbiyu, and if the balechovis come and take it away, bein chovach lehizik, whether the debt came before the nezik, bein hizik ach lechov, or whether the nezik came before the debt, masha also, what he did is done, l'fishein mishtalim min ha'aliyah, because anyway, the nizik is only going to be paid min ha'aliyah, he's not paid out of the body of the animal anyway. Even if one's a akiva, he has no particular rights to the animal, because he has a general shibud on the guy's mechasim for the nezik shalom.
What if the guy has no other property besides this story?
Well, okay, so in that case, then fine. Normally there's no shibud on the talisman, but fine. You know, in that case, yeah, but we're talking about an ordinary case when he has other machlokes. Stolen goods are not allowed to, but this isn't considered stolen necessarily. Okay, now let's start analyzing. If we say that if it's sold is considered a valid sale before Omer Medin, that means Libidia, that means as far as plowing. Like we said before, according to Rashi, meaning that the buyer is not going to have to reimburse him, he's not going to have to reimburse him for the plowing that he did, and according to the Rashba, that he's allowed to plow with it like a chel. We said that if he declares it hektish, it's muktash in the sense of what Rav Abou said, that you're gonna have to give a pruta in order for it to not be hektish. Doesn't matter. The din is, you have to redeem hektish for its proper value. But the evid, if you purge it from the shor prota, then it's a valid pity. So we don't care if people see, because the fact is, but the evid is the thing would be okay anyway. Shachter v'nasna matana mashasa. So he said, if you shechted the animal or you gave it away as a present, then what's done is done. So bishlema nasna matana mashasa asu l'ridya. Fine, I can understand what it means if you gave it away as a present. Again, it means the same thing. That is the guy who received the present will not have to pay the nizik for the plowing, or will be allowed to plow with it. No, that masha also nothing matana. That's what we understand what nothing matana means. El shachte, but what do you mean if he shechted it masha also asuri, implying that the nizik has no recourse after that? Leisi v'lishlemi bisher. Shouldn't the nizik have the right to be paid out of the meat of the animal? You figure out the amount of the meat and give him that. The Tanya has, in fact, we learn a brayta. The pasuk says chai, or mocher is a shor chai. It says they should sell the living animal. Ami el chai. You would know that. You would only know from the pasuk that it's okay if the animal that caused the damage is still alive. Shocht eminayin. How do we know the same thing applies even if the owner shechted it afterwards? Tamed by mo mocher is a shor. We call mocher. No, the pasuk says they should sell the shor, meaning regardless what state the shor is in, whether alive or dead. So what are you telling me? Shocht then masha also three. Amrav Shizvi, you're right. You're right. You don't mean that the nizik is not going to be able to collect from the meat. What you mean is you don't deduct the amount that now it's worth less because it was shechted. So in other words, the mazik before was responsible to pay the value of the animal, up to the value of the animal. Let's say the animal was worth 100. Now it's been shefted and turned into meat. It's only worth 80. It's only worth 80. It's only worth $80. You don't make him pay the extra 20. You just, he gives him, you don't make him, you, he gives him the extra, he gives the past shchita, the fact that the amount, the value of it went down because it was shefted, and now it's going to have to be eaten quickly because it's going to spoil, etc. You don't have to reimburse the nizik for that. So you shefted
it.
But you don't.
Not supposed to.
He may not have been supposed to, but the fact is it was before Omad Bedin, it was before the case ever went to Bedin. Therefore, he just gives him, therefore he just gives him the meat and that's that. Based on this, we can deduce that if a person causes a damage to somebody else's shibud, for example, Rashi gives an example. You have land which is meshubud to somebody else, and somebody causes a hezek in it, potter. Then he's potter. The same way as you're saying over here that the whole animal, the whole $100 worth of a live animal is under shibud, but now that it's shefted, it's only worth 80, and that's all you have to pay. You're not responsible for the other 20, even though you caused that hezek. The same thing if you damage a field.
We say it applies to sure not to land.
No, there's no reason to think. I'll be obligated to ask Shita. Isn't that obvious? Isn't that obvious? Even without Rav Huna Breda Bishua saying that, it obviously amounts to the same thing. Yeah. The answer is no, because the difference is when it comes to shefting the animal in a certain way, you could say, after all, I didn't really cause you a loss. I didn't really directly do something. Effectively, what it is I took away the wind. Before the animal was alive, now it's dead. But it's still the same. It's still the same. It's still basically the same. It's still basically the same thing. Wait, but when it comes to being mazik shibud, let's say by causing actual damage to it, as the Gemara is going to give an example in a second, let's say digging holes in it, you've literally changed the status of the karka now, you would think maybe that's different. Kamash Malan, that is why Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua has to tell us that they're exactly the same thing. Yeah. So the question is, Honami Rabba Amra. Fine, still, why do we need Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua to tell us that? We already have Rabba telling it to us. Because Rabba says that if somebody burns somebody else's shtoret, potter, then he's potter because it's considered a groma. It's considered an indirect damage. Now, actually, to be exact, what is considered is dina de garment. And we've learned before, we learned about this in Gittin, we learned about this a few days ago, that the halacha is you chayev the dina de garment. So as a matter of fact, a person burns somebody else's shtoret, he is going to be chayev. But our Gemara is going to point to the opinion that you're potter for dina de garment.
So Rabba is saying
that if you burn somebody else's shtoret, that's
you're potter. The opinion that you're not.
That you're not. The point is, though, that it's a mayor says that. It's machlokes hanoim. But Rabba is going to point to the opinion of Chachamim that you're there. Yeah. So anyway, the point is, Rabba is saying if you burn somebody else's shtoret, you're potter, which amounts to damaging his shibud, because it's not, you haven't directly burnt his money, but you burnt something which would be proof that he could have collected money, and we're saying you're potter. Shouldn't that be the same thing as this? And now, Rashi points out, okay, so Rabba said it. Big deal. Rabba's an Amora. Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua is an Amora. So what's the problem? Mele, if Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua said something that it says in a Mishnah or a Braisa, okay, what's the chiddush? Why can't he repeat something that Rabba says? Rashi says because Rabba is one of the great Amoraim, he's one of the top level Amoraim, something that he said is considered as well known a fact as if it was in a Mishnah or a Braisa. You shouldn't expect Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua to just be repeating it without citing Rabba, yeah. Other Mephoshim point out various other possibilities, including maybe Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua may have been Rabba's Talmud. In that case, he should at least be quoting it in his name, or in the same, not just in his name, he should be quoting it in the same Lashon as him. Rabba said the Lashon Aseret Shtoret Shachaberei, Rav Huna Brei Yehoshua should not be coming up with a new case with a new concept of his own Amazik Shibud Shachaberei. He should be repeating Rabba's statement. Yeah. Anyway, so why is he saying that? The answer is Mao Detema, because still you might think there's a difference. You might argue, because in the case of the shtar, after all, maybe the guy can say, Niyoraba alma kaloyimino. After all, I mean, look, what I burnt is a piece of paper. That piece of paper had writing on it that said that you owed X amount of money. Fine, but it's a piece of paper. But you would think when it comes to the land, you actually went and dug ditches or pits or wells in it. Maybe you should be chayev because it's something clearly visible. And actually, Rashi points out the same thing would apply then to the case of the shechita. The shechita is clearly visible. Before the animal was alive, and now it's dead. Kamash Malan.
More than a paper.
Yeah, that's the point. L'chayev, so you would think maybe it should be chayev. Kamash Malan. Because after all, in the case of shechita, kiman dechofa b'boros shuchan b'ayin dami, it's the equivalent of digging pits or ditches in it. Because unlike what the Gemara said a couple of lines ago, that the guy could argue, okay, all I took away is the animal's wind, the animal's life, the animal's breath. No, the fact is, there's an obvious clear difference before with a layah, before with a live, now it's dead. And yet we say he's potter. So therefore, we say, "V'kama masha also asim." We said, "What's done is done," and he doesn't have to pay him for the remainder. So the same thing then when he broke the other guy's shire, and the same thing when he dug ditches in his property. Yeah. So we'll continue. The Gemara is going to continue tomorrow, analyzing the Braita, and we'll see what it means that business about the Baal HaChayv taking away the animal. Why, if the Chayv came before the Nezek, why should they not be entitled to take it?